Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Good morning. Sal Capaccio joins us, Jeremy and Joe, here on WGR on this Thursday morning. The Bills will head off to Chicago today to plan for their practice with the Bears tomorrow and then a game on Sunday. Of course, we have the James Cook news. We got Sal on yesterday for 2 minutes just to say, like, hey, it happened. So, Sal, we got your instant reaction. Now we've got the, 24 hours later, everyone's had a chance to kind of digest it. So we'll get into that and practice happenings. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. Yeah. Now we had a chance to kind of just digest everything, as you said, and, you know, saw James Cook out at practice, heard from Brandon Bean yesterday right away, heard from James Cook. And, now things start to fall in and analyzing the contract. We get the numbers. I know SpotTrack tweeted out some of the numbers yesterday as well. So there's a lot to digest here. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, just over 24 hours later here when this happened is the waters have kind of calmed, right? Yeah, it's the story. But the Bills are going forward. They have their team. There's no drama. And it's time to play football. I think really kind of that's the message here from everybody involved.
You know, Sal, at your piece at WGR550.com, one thing you tweeted out a picture of this, Cook practicing, the Hard Knocks crew nearby. Mm-hmm. And it kind of occurred to me, you know, we thought Hard Knocks might chronicle this Holden, and they still might. Now that we actually have a friendly ending, now we might see a little behind the scenes of Bean's side of the story and Cook's side of the story and whatever, like just some more of it might come because now there's a celebration at the end of the road for these both these sides.
No doubt. And you're right. And thank you. I thought it was really interesting watching that because I tweeted out some video and it's at my story. It's also at my X feed at Sal Sports. And I'm watching him stretch. And the first thing I notice is all the cameras near him while he's stretching. And I've said, and this is true, Hard Knocks is there. They're very noticeable. They're not intrusive. And I don't think they're being intrusive here either. You could say they're kind of off to the sides. But here's James Cook stretching with, you know, 80-something other guys. And there's a boom mic right there. There's a camera on his right. There's a camera on his left. And I thought that same thing, Jeremy, which is, what are we going to get next Tuesday? It's the first practice back. Like, I mean, I guess I wouldn't say he's mic'd up. Maybe he is, but he's got the boom mic there, so probably not. But there's going to be probably sound and video of James Cook back on the practice field with his teammates. You know, are they giving him ribbing about, you know, money and, you know, hey, you're buying dinner and things like that. You know what I mean? So I just think that that's going to probably be part of the storyline because, as you point out, it's a happy ending and everybody's going to be kind of, jovial about it.
So how do you feel like the contract structure ends up looking to you? Like what the cap hits are, you know, we knew it would be a little bit lower this year. It's not like a 5-year deal, but he's signed now for 5 more seasons. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was playing around with that earlier. Like really, it's 3 years for sure, and then they can kind of get out of it without changing it however they would do that. I mean, $3 million in 28 and $4 million in 29, if in 3 years something happened that they wanted to move on. Like, he's signed for 5 years, but really, anytime after the next three, it feels like they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I always felt that would probably kind of happen like that because that's just the nature of, and it's not this contract and this player specifically, it's just the nature of NFL contracts. You look at anybody who signs extensions for 4 or 5 years, you're generally looking at, you know, a couple of years down the road, there's some way the team can kind of move on and not have to take on a huge dead cap hit. You know, that's probably going to be the case here. It is important to note, and I'm glad you said it, Joe, like he is under contract for 5 years, not just 4 years. You can move money around, and the Bills were able to do that and give themselves some cap relief this year, by the way. And then his cap, excuse me, according to SpotTrack, at least his cap hit next year, it's only 5.8. That's really kind of what it was this year. So you're really kind of keeping that in line, even going next year for his cap. And then it really balloons to $13 million, $13.5 million. And that's when you have to start making decisions on where you are with the timeline of this with James Cook. So, yeah, there's going to be some things down the road where the Bills are going to have to think about it and revisit. And look, the best scenario is James Cook continues to be what he's been for this football team. And you're like, okay, we're really good where he's sitting because he's not making extraordinary money at the time they sign him. He's getting what is he the highest paid? He's the what right now? Average per year. How many running backs in? Eighth highest paid running back per year is it right now?
I think that's right.
At the average?
Yeah,
I think that's right. But you know, you guys know what I mean. By the time you get to a couple years down the road, he might be what, 15th, and maybe you can live with that a little bit more. So, look, I think James Cook's side did a good job here. They did. For all of the things that we say about the agent and James Cook and how awkward this was and how, to me, I don't think they handled it, you know, really quite well overall. I think at the end of the day, they did a good job for James Cook. He got paid. And it wasn't the $15 million that was floated out there. But it's a nice paycheck. And, you know, he deserved to get a nice raise. But I think the Bills also did a nice job here to think about down the road how they're not completely crippling themselves while keeping the band together here, which was already together, not upsetting that. And next year, again, not really having to worry about this because it's not some balloon payment next year. And then let's revisit it after 2026, 27, and going into 28.
Brandon Bean talking yesterday, Sal, most interesting things that he had to say. Was one of them, I was a little curious in him saying that, you know, like he had been holding in, and did he not say that to get back to the table, like, we're going to need you to practice?
Yes, he indicated that, yeah. Okay. So I asked him yesterday, the question was essentially, and can't remember exactly how I asked it, but that's what I wanted to know, Joe. Sean said some things had changed, right? Remember that? And I don't take that as Sean meaning the contract, but maybe it was more because he's the head coach. He doesn't deal with that part of it. And then we saw James on the field, and then the contract came down 24 hours later. So what I was curious about was, okay, did you know that that was happening? That was kind of my question. Like, did you know when he stepped on the field, like, okay, like, we're going to get this done, so get on the field and, you know, let's just kind of get it over the finish line. And his answer kind of indicated, well, it was basically, we need you on the practice field if we're going to get this done. Like, you need to practice, and then we're going to do it. He said it was good faith. That's the words he used, good faith. So to me, I interpret that as saying, hey, we're pretty close here. I promise I'll work my butt off tonight to get this done for you, but you got to also get on the practice field with your teammates because it's go time for football. That's how I interpreted that answer.
Sal Capaccio with us on the West Her Hotline. So Sal, like, at the position now, I mean, we're not talking about it at the draft. I mean, Ray Davis's contract, Ty Johnson's. Right. I mean, this is their running back room, right, for 3 years, two years at least.
And what's Ty Johnson? I think Ty has just this year, right? I think Ty might have signed a one-year deal again. Let me just kind of look to make sure.
I thought
sure
his
on
was
that.
Two, but I don't have it in front of me.
I'm going to look at it right now, guys, to be honest with you. He is, yep, 2 years. So you're right, Joe. So he's got, so yeah, at least for another 2 years. Ray Davis going into his second year. And then, you know, obviously he's got a rookie deal, gives him 4 years. That's the other thing about this, which is the Bills feel very, very comfortable with their running back room. They feel very comfortable with their skill sets, how they offset each other, and going forward here for the foreseeable future. So yeah, we're not going to be sitting here having a discussion about drafting a running back early, short of, unfortunately, if something were to happen to one of these guys and they get injured or something like that, obviously. That's not going to happen. But I think the Bills feel very comfortable about where they are with their running back room. And I do not get, I've had this question asked me a few times, and maybe you guys have talked about it. Like, does this contract change James Cook's usage? My answer is no. Like, the Bills, I think that would be, like, foolish to say, oh, we're paying you more now, so you got to be on the field more. Like, the reason why James Cook could be on the field more is because James Cook could be better at pass blocking, right? I mean, that would be the reason, not because you paid him more. You don't do, that's not how you operate. The reason he's getting the money he's getting is because he's good at his role. He's really good at how he's doing what he's doing right now. Now, if he gets better at a few things, sure, you could see some increased usage, but the cause and effect there is not going to be simply because you're paying him more money. You need to see him on the field. That would be hurting the offense. Why would you actively hurt your own team if you don't feel comfortable with him being, but you say, oh, you need to do it now because you're being paid more money? That wouldn't make sense to me.
Sal Capaccio on the James Cook contract extension. They did practice yesterday, Sal, and the injury report, I don't know, by like preseason standards or whatever, build-up standards, it's about the same as it's been, a good number of names on this. The difference, I think, now is it's they're really shorthanded at receiver going into this joint practice and into this preseason game.
Obviously, Khalil Shakir is still out. Curtis Samuel had been working off to the side with trainers. He did once again yesterday, but he has not practiced. Elijah Moore was out yesterday. Tyrell Shavers was out yesterday. That's four wide receivers down, guys. And I'll also add, Joshua Palmer yesterday had a big wrap, like from top of his thigh all the way down to his ankle, and then he had a sleeve over the wrap. Like, I say big wrap, but you could tell it was kind of wrapped and it was pretty thick. But I'm going to give that guy a lot of credit because, to me, he did not look like he was 100%, and he did not take a rep off. He practiced, and he practiced hard, and he looked good. Like, I was really impressed by Joshua Palmer yesterday. Maybe just his toughness. Like, he was just practicing and catching balls, and it didn't matter. And you could tell when he came off the field, like, he was not 100%. And, you know, people could say, and I had people go, well, why are they practicing him? Well, if the trainers feel that he's not going to do any more injured, get more injured, and he feels fine, then you can do that, right? That's a conversation you have. I'm just making the point that, like, he's also a little bit banged up, and he was out there and he was doing his work. I don't know what that means for Friday. Not sure yet. We'll find out. Does that mean that there's no Elijah Moore, Tyrell Shavers? Does Curtis Samuel come back? We know you're not going to get Khalil Shakir. So maybe you get a bunch of these guys back. Maybe you don't. They are dipping deeper into the wide receiver depth chart. That's for sure. It's giving more guys opportunity, obviously. But right now, they are kind of patching it together and having to put guys out there that maybe a few weeks ago you wouldn't expect here in week number two of the preseason.
Yeah, Sal, it's kind of interesting. Like, half the reason, I know you're asked a lot, hey, tell me about the camp that Elijah Moore has had or the camp that Josh Palmer has had. And the answer has been almost that everybody's had a quiet camp except for Shavers, and even he's hurt right now. So, like, you know, it's not even as if these injuries are giving certain guys the opportunity to step up, other than Keon Coleman being consistently out there. Like, he might be benefiting the most in terms of chemistry because he's the guy that's been out there all the time.
Yeah, and I'll add in, I know not wide receiver, Jeremy, but like, I thought Dalton Kincaid had another nice day. I think Dalton Kincaid has really put together, he's stacking really good days on top of really good days, right? It just kind of really felt like that. More so on Tuesday than Wednesday. Like, it wasn't as, he didn't pop as much on Wednesday. Not that he did anything wrong, but I really noticed him. I noticed Joshua Palmer more yesterday on Wednesday. But this is, I think, a point you're making, too, about just the pass catchers, right? Getting guys. Guys are out there. The two guys, if you could identify two guys on this football team going into this year who you said they really need to be on the field with Josh, getting reps and stacking good days, wouldn't we both say Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid? Like, wouldn't that be the answer? And I just think that's happening because of what you said. They're getting opportunity. They're out there. And I like how that's going. You're right. It is tough to kind of get an evaluation. It's tough to have these guys missing time with each other, getting that chemistry. It's not just with Josh. It's with the rest of the route runners, right? It's the guys knowing, like, when you run a route, when you're in a, you know, 3-4 wide receiver set and there's a guy next to you and you're running a route, those things matter too. It's not just Josh Allen throwing you the ball and the timing. It's where the guy on my right or my left is breaking off his route compared to what he sees with the DB who's guarding us and all those kinds of things. Those things matter. And it's not just wide receiver, by the way. They're going through this on the offensive line right now as well. I mean, suddenly Ryan Vandermark is a really important player here. they have no – Deion Dawkins missed practice yesterday. Remember when he left practice Tuesday with trainers? He was not out there yesterday. Sean McDermott said on Chopin the Bulldog yesterday that Deion had a back flare-up, and they're hoping it gets better in the next 24, 48 hours, and he can perform in Chicago, which is good news, but we'll see. So Deion's out. We know that Tylon Grable is out because he is in concussion protocol. He was the swing tackle last year who would normally fill in for Deion or Spencer Brown. And Spencer Brown, yes, he's been out there, but we know that he dealt with a back issue earlier. So, you know, you just want to make sure that he's good. Well, suddenly now, you know, Ryan Vandermark is thrust into a guy that's really important on this team. That's happening. So that's not just wide receiver. It's everywhere right now.
Yeah, and the depth being tested all over on offense, right, Sal? Because, I mean, with Cook sitting out a little bit, there's Davis getting first-team reps, here's Vandermark, the receivers. But we are still at a point, right, where everybody feels like they're tracking towards being ready for week one, at least on that side of the ball.
Yeah, Joe, I think that's right. Maybe not Max Harrison, right? I know you're talking about offense, but just to kind of go through all the guys, right? Maybe not Max Harrison. That feels like it's something that's going to go in the regular season. Like, as I sit here right now, I have a suspicion, I don't know, that the Bills could put Max Harrison on the IR on that final cutdown day as one of those two guys they're allowed to come back. You know what I mean? So that would give him another 4 weeks where he doesn't have to be rushed and they don't have to count a roster spot for him. So that could be something you do. You're right. Khalil Shakir, hopefully, you know, excuse me, the boot is off, which is good. By the way, Max Harrison is off crutches, which is really good. And I think outside of them, maybe the other one is Cedric Van Pran Granger. My other prediction is I would think at this point that Cedric Van Pran Granger would just stay on the PUP list because then you don't have to put him on the 53. He could still come back after 4 weeks and you can just transition him. As long as he doesn't actually practice between now and that day, they can just put him, just keep him on the PUP list. Then he doesn't count on your team for 4 weeks. So that's how all that works. Other than that, Joe, I think what you're saying is correct, which is it doesn't seem like there's anybody right now that really is going to miss week one unless something new were to happen. And that's obviously really good news. That includes the two safeties who did return to practice yesterday, which obviously is really good news for the team.
Yeah, and Sal, I feel like that's an important point to make because I'm sure you get people saying, new strength coach, what's happening with all the injuries? But the other side of that would be, you know, sure, they're picking up their dings and their muscle, soft tissue stuff, but they're being cautious with these players.
Yes.
Like there's really no reason for these nine players to be in there. Whereas if it's the playoffs and the divisional round, they might all be available. As a kind of, maybe not all of them, but yeah, you know what I'm saying here. Is like they're making sure to just be safe here.
100% right. No doubt about it, right? Like, I mean, take Deion Dawkins, for example, right? I mean, remember Tuesday we had the story of Deion leaves practice. And then he, you know, Elena Getzenberg and Matt Bove see him in the field house. Hey, you know, you're going to be okay? And he just kind of looked at him. He smiled and he smirked and he danced away. He doesn't practice the next day. Sean McDermott says he has a back flare-up. Let's just say if this is a really important game in December, is he practicing yesterday? I don't know the answer to that question, but it might be a little bit different than, hey, you know what? We're in week two of the preseason. You're our starting left tackle, your franchise left tackle. You know, make sure you're right. Like, let's just kind of get through the next couple of days here. Yes, I think you do have to approach these things a little bit different. It's no different than when people say managing Joey Bosa's reps, right, as the season goes on. It's the same thing. We're going to see that. There's going to be rest days for guys, and there's going to be times where there's times in games where, okay, you know what, maybe you got a little lead here, late third quarter, early fourth quarter, you got a little lead, take a little bit off somebody's plate. A guy like Bosa, I'm saying here, right, something like that. Those are things that happen throughout. So, yes, Jeremy, you're right. They're being cautious with everybody, but – I'll go back to what Sean McDermott said when he spoke to us a couple days ago. It's time to start playing. It's time to get guys in the field. Yes, you have guys that are being or that are banged up and they're being cautious, but you need to see these guys at some point soon.
Joint practice with the Bears. They'll head off to Chicago. Sal, I wonder how it works or if you know this or have talked to anybody about this. You know, the teams kind of get together. Do GMs arrange that? Do coaches get in on that? Because in Chicago, you'd have a new coach. And these relationships with joint practices, I know a lot of teams find them useful. How do these teams come to terms on what we're going to do, what's going to happen? Basically, how do they build a joint practice?
It's mainly the coaches. They get out of it what they want to get out of it, right? So in this case, I would say, you know, and I'm not speaking for them and know exactly the communication because people have people who communicate for them sometimes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But let's just say whether that's someone for Sean McDermott or someone for Ben Johnson or them two directly, they're going to come up with a, hey, here's what we'd like to accomplish. Here's what you'd like to accomplish. And then you say, how do we put this together? How long of a one-on-one period do we want to do with wide receivers and DBs? How much of a red zone period do we want to do? How much of a third down period do we want to do? All these can be totally different from practice to practice, from team to team. You know, what Sean McDermott and his team needs to accomplish and see might be a little different than what Ben Johnson and his team needs to accomplish and see. And you mesh that together and you talk and, you know, it's going to look like a normal practice for if you went out to St. John Fisher. So I know fans aren't going to be there. I'll be there. Media will be there. But it's not going to look any different other than you're going to get more live stuff, right? More guys going against each other a little bit more on these types of periods. That's what you want to see. So, yeah, that's how that comes together. I think the overall picture is the organization decides, you know, and that's everybody, GM, presidents, everybody gets together, like, where would this fit? Who's the best team to do this with? Let's trust the other coaches. McDermott and Bean have spoken many times about these, going back to 2019 when they went to Carolina. Remember that year, right? 2019, they go to Carolina. And Sean and Brandon made it very well known. Look, this doesn't work unless it's with somebody you trust. And in that case, it's Ron Rivera. Yeah. This doesn't work unless it's with an organization that you know is going to treat this right, and we're going out there to get things accomplished. We're not going out there to have fights every 5 minutes, right? Those kinds of things can happen, and Sean has spoken on that. Like, that's not productive for anybody. And then who did they do it with last year? Sean McDermott's former teammate, Mike Tomlin, right? I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, the Steelers are known as a pretty buttoned-up organization. They're going to try to make sure that they do everything right and get their work accomplished. I like your point, though, Jeremy, about this is a team at the Bears. Yes, Ryan Poles is from Canandaigua, right? He's the GM. But I don't know if there's like this personal relationship like there had been with these other two teams they've done. So this will be a little different from that regard.
Yeah, it's, you kind of got to basically the genesis of my question is like, how did they just come to a relationship with the Bears on this to do that? It might just be as simple as the preseason game is not scheduled for that. So you see the game and say, all right, it's a Sunday. Let's give them a call and see if they want to join practice.
You know what's funny, though, too, is you're right about that, right? So I think the week two is the time that the Bills believe in doing this. They did this last year in week two. The Bears did one last week with the Dolphins.
Yeah, right. They're doing two of them, yeah.
And now they're doing another one, right?
And the Dolphins are doing two in a row. They did the Lions.
So I think it's just every team is a little bit different. It's like there's no rhyme or reason. I'm thinking, okay, if I'm Ben Johnson, let me put myself in Ben Johnson's shoes. If you're a head coach, you are a new head coach of the Chicago Bears. You have Caleb Williams. You're installing a new offense. I think it's interesting that they're doing two straight instead of taking more time to kind of do their own thing and install. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're going head in. Like, let's go. We're going joint practice week one, joint practice week two. I find that super interesting. Whereas, like, to me, that would feel like a situation where you might not want to do that right away because you need to get all the stuff you need for your baseline stuff. But Ben Johnson's going, let's go drink out of the fire hose right away. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Quickly to wrap, Sal, it's the Bears tomorrow. And I brought up Tremaine Edmonds earlier because he's kind of unique. There's Gabe Davis too, but there's so few examples of guys being talking about draft, develop, re-sign, another one yesterday with Cook. And there's so few guys that doesn't happen with. Edmonds is one of the few where he's a first-round pick and he ends up leaving. Do you remember, like, or what your perception is of kind of how that went down? Like, was it all about the money? Did you feel like the Bills weren't as motivated to bring him back? Because, again, like, looking back, his name's, like, top of the list, and it's not a very long list of guys that left.
So Edmonds specifically, Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was just simply – I do specifically remember that year at the Combine. Like, coming out of the Combine, it was, oh, Tremaine Edmonds is going to get paid. Like, someone's going to pay him a lot of money. And the Bills had just drafted Terrell Bernard the year before that. And it's like, okay, it's not going to be the Bills. Like, it just felt like, I don't think there's any way the Bills are going to pay Tremaine Edmonds, considering what he's going to command, whatever that was going to be. And it wound up being, the highest paid linebacker that year in free agency. But that was kind of something that percolated, like, right away. You're like, okay. So I do think it kind of became about the money in that situation. Do I think the Bills, could they have re-signed or wanted to sign Tremaine Edmonds if he said, hey, I really want to come back and I'll go home for a really low price? Sure. I mean, you know, it's a question I wonder about James Cook, actually. It's funny. I don't know. I was thinking about this yesterday. Let's just go back a few months, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, the Bills, we know they're motivated to bring James Cook back. They want to re-sign James Cook. That has been said, and I've said that many times. It was never about not wanting James Cook back. But let's just say James Cook went to the Bills in February or March and said, you know what, guys? Love being here. Love this team. But I really don't need to re-sign anything. I want to have the best year ever, and then I want to be a free agent and go to the highest bidder. Let's just say that happened. How motivated would the Bills be to go, no, we need to have you back. We're going to do this, right? I just think it's super interesting on how each side can look at things.
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's the timing of it, right? Like, you're getting ahead of it by 1 year. Like, part of the Edmonds thing is, you know, this timeline we're talking about is when he's up for a deal. I don't remember anything about the year before and whether they were going to pay him then. But
Edmonds? You're talking about Edmonds?
Yeah.
Remember, there was a fifth-year option in there, right? They picked up the fifth-year option after year three, so they had him for two more years. He plays out year four, and then he goes into that final year on his fifth-year option, and then he winds up leaving after that. So, look, he's one of the only guys. Like you said, Gabe Davis is another one. He wasn't a first-round pick. But for the most part, like, the Bills, they have, I think, as much as any team in this league. I don't know. You'd have to show me another team that's done it as much as the Bills. They have adhered to their philosophy of draft, develop, and re-sign. That's what they've done.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. All right, Sal, we'll chat from Chicago next as the Bills head off to the Windy City to take on the Bears.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio. So joint practice tomorrow. Did you see any? I know, Joe. I know it's preseason. I know it's camp highlights. Do we put joint practice highlights at least a little above regular camp highlights? You are competing against another team, and they're trying to win the reps.
Yep.
Did you happen to see how the Dolphins secondary fared against one Amon-Ra St. Brown?
No, but I can imagine. I saw an overall take that the Dolphins got dominated by the Lions all day.
There was a cut-up reel of St. Brown in one practice against the Dolphins, and he is great.
He's awesome.
And he was prime Jerry Rice for 2 hours. You had some of the, I mean, he was dusting guys. It was pretty impressive. And Jared Goff was just like threading needles. It's practice, I know. But those two have put together a couple of good seasons. It's just, put it this way. If the Bills had this practice and it's any corner, I mean, you'd never see Benford get cooked like this. But
yeah,
if the other Bills corners had the day that the Dolphins had, we would be coming in the next one like, this could be a problem. So yeah, not a great joint practice for Miami.
Tua was talking frustrated. Like every single vibe in Miami, I feel like
is collapsed.
This is going to be bad.
Yeah, it might not be right, but I saw that too. Like, hey, Nate made a point on this. He likes to pick on the Dolphins. It's like, hey, it's only year four. It's okay. You guys are having rough days out there. Like everybody's back, and it's year four in your offense. Yeah, okay,
right.
Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a ring on the James Cook signing, on who should play in the preseason here. The next look you'll get at the team is going to be Sunday night against the Bears and Ben Johnson's new-look Bears. We'll take your calls and keep rolling through this Thursday morning here on WGR. All right, for those of you that know, this is the Let's Get Stupid music. I've got a Let's Get Stupid, Joe.
Exciting. What do we got?
Are you ready?
Yes.
So, here it is. Actually, I have two. One of them is call the Cowboys because Micah Parsons was just named the 36th best player in the NFL Top 100.
By low?
Call Jerry Jones. I'm like, hey, he's only 36, man.
You're trading the 36th best player in the league. It's nothing.
Get him out of there. No, that's not it.
Let's get stupid that the NFL Top 100 list is still going.
What did I tell you, right? Two a day.
I forgot about
what
it.
What a horrible mistake. They used to own the list season, and they just gave it up. Anyway,
yeah.
I searched the definition of a certain phrase.
Okay.
The phrase in negotiation being anchoring. So negotiation anchoring. I'm reading from a definition here that I found online, and you know, you'll know what I'm getting at pretty soon. Negotiation anchoring refers to the psychological phenomenon where the first number mentioned in a negotiation heavily influences subsequent discussions and the final agreement. It's a cognitive bias where people give undue weight to the initial figure, even if it's unreasonable or arbitrary, and adjust their offers or expectations around it. Mm-hmm. So, here's where Let's Get Stupid comes in. What am I getting at? I'm getting at James Cook tweeting $15 million.
Is your Let's Get Stupid going to be that James Cook made a mistake by tweeting out $15 million and not $20
million? No. My Let's Get Stupid is that the best thing that ever happened to the Bills was James Cook tweeting out $15 million. Because it makes it look like they did great.
Well, it's kind of
even if he didn't want $15 million. That's just one take. The Let's Get Stupid is this. If you're pretty close all along, let's say the Bills and Osiris Torrance are close. Mm-hmm. You know? Hey, we got an extension. We're looking at like $18 million, man. You know? Would you do us a favor? Would you tweet out $25 million? Just go ahead and tweet that out. And then we'll sign the deal that we both like, and just do us a favor. It'll look better if people think you want this crazy arbitrary number that is not realistic. Just saying, let's get stupid by throwing the big number when the lesser number comes in. That also happens. That also happens, by the way, on every single contract now in the NFL where it's 5 years, $50 million. Oh, wow. Okay, well, you know, that's a good deal. 24 hours later, actually, guys, it's more like 4 years, $30 million. Oh, that's great. The deal never, ever goes up. Every NFL conversation about contracts, it's signed, and then the real money comes down a bit, and the cognitive effect is to think every deal is better than reported. So let's get stupid. Just tell your players to tweet out big numbers and sign them for the regular number, and everybody will think you're smart.
Well, let me go a little bit deeper even. All right, I'm Osiris Torrance, and you say, hey, do you want to tweet out $25 million to make it look about how much you're willing to give me for it?
Yeah, I'll give you an extra $500,000 just to claim you want $25 million.
I'm thinking like $2 million, though. You're gonna throw an extra $2 million on my deal, and then I will tweet out the $25 million.
All right, let's get to it.
Now we have a separate negotiation about how much it's worth for you to get the credit that you won the negotiation.
Perfect. This is you're on my level. Diana Rossini has just tweeted that the Bills and Osiris Torrance can't come to an agreement on the amount he should tweet for his big ask in the negotiating the negotiation anchoring number.
Yes.
He's gonna throw that $15 million. Went around the world 350 times.
It did.
Should never have been treated as a real thing, but it kind of, again, like if you're Cook and you just wanted what he got, pretty close to what he got, what you do is you put the big number first.
Really, I think you could argue he made a mistake.
Oh,
I think he should.
Not at all.
I think he should have tweeted 20. You're saying okay, it made the Bills look great. Like, You're saying that it was beneficial to the Bills for him to do that, which I think...
But only in review. If he tweets 20, they look even better.
Well...
They look even better.
If he tweets 20, maybe they think 15 isn't that bad. Maybe they think, hey... This is what I wonder. Would they have been willing to give him $15 million if he hadn't tweeted out $15
million?
Because he tweets out $15 million, and if they see that and go... Well, wait a minute. If we give him what we were ready to give him, it makes it look like, well, we just caved. We just gave him exactly what he wanted.
You could make any case that the first anchor isn't far enough out there.
That's what I mean.
Let's apply it to something we can find relatable that's not, you know, tens of millions of dollars. You want a player on my fantasy football team. You come at me with an offer of a second-round pick, and I write back, that's laughable, and then I counter. You have accomplished what you wanted, right? You just wanted to get started on what the deal is, and now we go from there. And whether it's making a big offer, I'll give you four firsts and this, or I'll ask you, right? You want to trade for Josh Allen in a league, and I say, it'll be three firsts. You immediately come back with, what about two firsts and this player? And we're off and running, and even though I didn't expect to get the three firsts, I have established in our negotiation that it's going to take a lot. That's why every one of these trade rumors, the Steelers would command a first and a third. Uh-huh, sure you would. And then what do they always go for? A second?
Right, but that's what I mean. If they started a second, they're probably not getting a second.
Right.
So that's why
negotiation anchoring, Cook.
Like maybe
I guess you if you want to say he should go bigger, you could try to make that case.
Because I don't know that 15 was that absurd. Like I don't think he was worth that. I mean they ended up $3 million lower. I think it's more appropriate. But I don't think 15 was nuts.
I think 15
20
was nuts.
Is nuts. 20 I is think, 20. By the way, is still not even you're the highest paid running back in football.
I think 15 was always nuts. Always. I think 15 was. I play 50% of the snaps. And I want to be paid the third highest paid back in the league. And I think he and his agent probably knew it was nuts. But what they did was they put that anchor out there. And again, it's not just the cognitive effect or the cognitive bias on the people that are evaluating the deal, but on the Bills too. Like if the Bills wanted to pay 8 and Cook wanted 10, he should ask for 15. It's not always split in the middle. Mm-hmm. It's whatever you can do to bring them up further. And if they feel great, They're so happy about that they gave him a little more than they actually were planning for. Every dollar squeezed out when you're negotiating like that is a win. You could do this for contracts like this. You could do this on these tariffs. 50%. Oh, actually, it's negotiated down to 20. Oh, what a win. All right, we did great. Mm-hmm. Like, well, it's still an increase. So, you know, the negotiation side of it, it did serve the Bills well, and it might have served Cook well to put it that high because now – 10.5, 11.5, whatever the real number is, everyone's thinking like, oh, wow, look at this. They did great. They didn't pay him 15. Well, yeah, that was just a tool the entire time. So let's get stupid. Have your players tweet out a crazy number. Osiris Torrance, 30 mil.
30.
Tweet out 30 mil. Osiris Torrance just tweet out hashtag reset the guard market.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Not even that, just highest paid guard. Highest paid guard in the NFL.
I'm telling you.
We do it with quarterbacks. We don't do it with the other positions, though, I guess. Like, quarterback, it's not. This would be like, I guess, James Cook maybe would look ridiculous by saying this. If he had gone on some podcast and said, I want to make running back like quarterback. I'm not saying I'm the best running back in football, but how come at that position you don't have to be the best? It's just, oh, it's your turn. You're getting paid. But in my position, I'm not asking for 50. I just want it. It's my turn. I'm not saying I'm better than McCaffrey, but
that answer,
McCaffrey got paid 5 years ago. Now it's my turn. Let's make it like quarterback.
That answer is because quarterback is so irreplaceable.
And it rises all the time. And running back doesn't rise.
Even if you've got Derek Carr, even if you've got whatever, C.J. Stroud is up for his deal. Like, your alternative is a massive drop-off as opposed to just like, you'd never say, I'd just throw the other guy in there.
Well, I wonder, though, if there will be another position like that. I don't think there is one, right? Quarterback is the only one where it has nothing to do with whether you're the best. It's just, is it your turn? Yep. And there's not another position like that, right? Like, receiver's not like that.
No, it gets close. You have to be one of the best to get to the top. A quarterback, right. We can know you're not the best, but you're due.
Like right.
Kyler Murray's big contract and all that, yeah.
Yeah, defensive end's not like Danielle Hunter isn't number one in the league in salary just because it was his turn.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. To join us, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
All right, welcome back. It's Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
I'm back too, yeah.
You're back
broadcasting too. From home today, which means, you pop upstairs, whatever, say hi, listen to the chaos.
Run back down.
Yeah.
What are we doing? Are we eating breakfast this early?
Yeah. One thing about, I broadcast from home rarely. I did quite a bit, like 2020, 2021.
Sure.
The kids were just born. Now we're at the age where when I am home for a morning show or really for anything, especially the mornings, though, because I'm not around breakfast a lot. What I would describe it as, Joe, as an hour and a half of screaming.
Breakfast time or just the mornings?
Just the mornings. Like these, the twin 4-year olds and the 1-year old is just a lot. There's a lot of yelling from them. Hmm. From them, yeah.
You don't hear it.
No.
So it must mean it's a good mic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot.
Will you hear it? Will you hear like the scream like while you're on the air? Like I wonder what that's over.
Yes.
What's going on up there?
Yeah, it's the mornings can be dramatic for them. Big feelings. That's what we say, right? That's what you're supposed to say now. Oh, yeah, a lot of big feelings up there today. A lot of big feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like a post game show. A lot of big feelings. You know, the Bills lost to the Ravens, and we're having big feelings.
Yeah.
If they lose to the Ravens. Opener is.
They don't need to put that into the universe.
It's very possible.
It's possible.
And if they do, that's fine. The season opener is 3 weeks from today.
Three?
That's it.
The NFL opener.
Yeah, the NFL. Obviously. The Eagles Cowboys, 3 weeks from today.
3 weeks from today. Will Micah Parsons play? What would you bet right now on that?
Why are we talking about the 36th best player in football? Who cares?
He's probably better than that, isn't he?
He's definitely way better than that. Yes.
He's a lot better than that.
But the NFL players. That's the thing. He got underrated by the NFL players.
I want somebody to make me believe in these holdouts again. Like, all these signings, everyone just stays. Everyone just signs. All of it's fake. The trade requests and the holdouts and everything is just never actually the guy's going to get out of there. It's just an exercise and I'm just going to use this to get a couple million more. Somebody get traded. Somebody make it like really, really, really ugly. And I feel like Hendrickson is going to be my champion on that, right? More than anybody.
But the roadmap for that to happen is going to be tough. I almost want to say for Hendrickson to get traded, Burrow has to get hurt. Aren't they going to feel like they're alive no matter what, no matter how bad their defense is?
Well, what if he's not playing?
But as I'm saying, you just don't give him to somebody else. You hope that he decides in week 10 to come back so the contract holds, so he gets his year in. Because otherwise, if he sits out the full year, it doesn't count. And if you're trying to find a scenario where Cincinnati moves Hendrickson, I think it's a seller's move, and I think that only happens if Burrow is hurt.
What if he really goes nuts and he like goes into the offices and he starts throwing things?
I feel like then they
find
him.
What if he does
him?
That? They just find him?
Find him and suspend him?
What if he goes into the owner's office and just flips the desk over?
You're going for George Costanza scenarios here?
Come on. Like, somebody work a little harder at this. Dude, like Costanza. It. Go grab, I guess the Bengals don't have a Super Bowl. Micah Parsons, go into the Cowboys facilities, get the Lombardi trophy, tie it to the end of your car, and drive around the parking lot. See if they trade you then. Yes, I need somebody to go full Costanza. Somebody, please.
You just want to believe in workplace disputes again.
Would Bills fans not want Micah Parsons if he did that? Like, oh, look at this guy, so disrespectful. Don't need that in our locker room.
This is kind of like when it's the draft.
And then I would want to fight them all.
You're hoping somebody gets like a
Laramie Tunsil?
Yes, a Laramie Tunsil gas mask.
A little bit.
A gas mask. Drop 10 spots.
Right.
All right. Final hour of the show, 803-0550. Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a ring on the Cook contract extension if you'd like. It's getaway day for Joe. He is wearing a scarf. I mean, people are asking questions. He is wearing a scarf today. So, hey, do your thing.
I like that. It's comfortable. Should wear a scarf all the time.
You and James Cook. James
I might
Cook
just wear this the rest of the year, or at least until Liverpool aren't champions anymore.
James Cook wore a winter hat at the stadium the other day. It was 98 million degrees.
Yeah, that's nuts.
You and James Cook wearing winter gear in the summer. All right, Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.